Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, June the 7th. Brian Shields here in for Ray Graff. Today is the start of the 17th annual Capital Region Polish Fest, our program all about the popular dishes from the nations of Poland and Lithuania. In the studio, we have four guests all involved in this weekend's festivities. Chef John Kowalski of the Culinary Institute of America, Barbara Chapitis of the Polish Fest Book Club, cookbook author Peter Zaranski and pierogi expert Greg Archer are here to give us a taste of what's in store for the festival, which runs through Sunday in Latham. The number to call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Your calls, all things Polish today, coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Thank you for joining us today on Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in program. I'm Brian Shields. It's Food Friday. Today, it's all about the nations of Poland and Lithuania as the 17th annual Capital Region Polish Fest is underway in Latham. And we have four guests involved with the festival in the studio today. Chef John Kowalski of the Culinary Institute of America, Polish cookbook author Peter Zaranski, pierogi expert Greg Archer, and Barbara Chapitis, who you may remember from the Writers Forum. They're all here to give us a taste of what's in store for the festival. John, Peter, Greg, and Barbara, welcome to Food Friday today.
Great to be here.
It's good to be here.
The number to call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Okay, the festival underway. It's at 250 Old Maxwell Road in Latham. Who wants to tell me more about it?
Well, there'll be 25,000 pierogi there. This is Greg. 10 varieties, which is stunning. Can you imagine 25,000 pierogis? I think
what are you going to do with the leftovers? There's not going to be 25,000.
There's not going to be leftovers.
There will not be leftovers. But there's okay. Pizza pierogi, which I think started maybe last year. Mm-hmm. And from my understanding, there's potato and sauerkraut on top. So that'll be something new. 16 slices of Polish pizza, 45 cans of imported Polish beer, 3,000 potato pancakes, 3,000 gołąbki, or stuffed cabbage, as people might know them, and three polka bands, a Chopin piano concert, a Slavic string concert, a music of the concentration camps, which should be pretty soul-stirring, and two folk dance troupes, polka lessons, and dance all day and night in the big tent, among many, 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 many other things.
And Barbara, what is Lithuanian cuisine? Is it different than Polish cuisine greatly?
I think they may use more bacon. I'm not sure. I have yet to read a
My
Lithuanian.
My vote for the Polish, then, if they use more bacon. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've yet to read a Lithuanian recipe that didn't say, and put some bacon in. So it could be that. What I want to say about the festival, too, is that there's just this incredible amount of this luscious food, but there's also a lot of cultural experience. And I think that people should be reminded of that. You know, there's the music and the dancing and the singing. And I'll be doing a workshop on writing memoir from your family history. And
there's demonstrations going on.
There's demonstrations going on.
Pierogies, making gołąbkis and stuff.
Yep.
So
there's
a lot of the heritage being
presented. It's great you're doing a workshop on that, too. I wrote a book about my Polish family a few years ago, a memoir. Researching their history was very vital.
One of the things that we found as we travel up and down different Polish heritage festivals and other nationality festivals is that Poles are absolutely in love with their heritage in a very deep way. Mm. And there are Polish websites on culture and tradition that have thousands of followers. When people look at our books, you know, our two cookbooks, they're all about treasured heritage recipes, and they just pursue everything about their culture and about their heritage
absolutely.
In some ways more than other nationalities.
How has it changed once it comes to these shores? I mean, most cuisine from foreign shores, Irish, Chinese, Italian, something changes. It becomes a little bit more Americanized. Is that true?
Well, it does. A lot of it is because home cooks, you know, find ways to make recipes a little easier or a little more palatable to their families. But what our cookbooks are about is promoting the heritage recipes that Babcia used to make. So we're all about, you know, making sure that they don't forget the recipes and the dishes that they grew up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the traditional ones stay from the in-home, from the houses, the grandma, mom's making it. Once it goes out, like the potato and cheddar and leek pierogies and that, then it becomes Americanized a little bit. It's a little bit more of the promotional sales and Americanized, so people end up buying a little bit more of
them. One thing that we've seen a fair amount of, actually, are the gowumpki, the stuffed cabbage rolls. The original way is to put the filling and wrap it in the cabbage leaves into a little pocket or a little pillow. But when it becomes a little bit more Americanized, some cooks get a little lazy, and they don't wrap it in the cabbage. They just put it in layers in a big bundt pan, you know, and they call it deconstructed. Yeah, not for me, thanks.
Yeah, that's not the way
the number to call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, Polish and Lithuanian cuisine today on Vox Pop Food Friday. Again, 800-348-2551, tweet your questions and comments, WAMC Vox Pop. Email us at voxpop@wamc.org, 800-348-2551. John, you teach at the CIA. Did you teach a course in Polish cooking? What do you do there?
Well, I teach right now, it's called the garmaje, where it's a segment of the cold kitchen. So things like making gravlaks, making kielbasis, doing some cured ham, brining, canapes, plated appetizers. That's my course at the culinary. Also teach, they have like boot camps, classes on weekends and stuff that they did. I've taught many of the Polish classes there, regional foods of Poland, featured their little demonstration and tasting presented to them.
Greg, how did you become a pierogi expert?
My mother and my aunt. I'm a journalist. I'm a multimedia journalist and author of Grace Revealed. I'll be doing a talk on that this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. But I lived in Northern California for many years, and when I visited Chicago, I'd always come home and make over 150 to 200 pierogies homemade with my mother. So she taught me. And I'm coming out with a cookbook next year, you know, not just with about pierogies, but other things in it as well.
Potato was a big part of Polish cooking.
Absolutely. Always.
Yeah.
There's not a dish that goes by without something potato in it, right?
What is kielbasa? Is that sausage?
Sausage.
It's just a word for sausage. That's it. Yeah. So, like, you got saucisson, the French terminology, or, you know, merguez or that. So it's a style, and it, every village, every town has a little different style. There's Krakowska, there's Wojewódzka, there's
from
the country, weddings, okay? And it all depends on what casing they're in, little different flavors, different cuts of meat, whether it's veal or added into the pork, or it's mainly pork or pork and beef a little bit. So it's just a little different mixtures. It's like when we say sausage here in the United States. That's what it means.
Good Polish sausage. Has so much more flavor than the product that you buy in the grocery stores. Like, well, I'm not going to name any brands, but you get them in the big grocery stores, and they're pale and they're kind of smooth. But good Polish sausage kielbasa is just amazing.
I had one at a White Sox game in Chicago.
Wow.
Amazing.
Chicago is the home for some.
It was better than the baseball team, actually. Yeah. let's talk to Richie in Monticello. Richie. Hello.
Hi,
go ahead.
You can hear me?
Yep.
Oh, thank you for taking the call. My grandmother and my mother, my mother's whole family actually, you know, came from Poland long time ago. And they're Jewish, and my grandma used to make a thing when I was a kid. It was called Kataflana Kleitskis.
Yes.
Now, you've heard of it?
I have heard of that.
Wow. The other
everybody's word, nodding. Everybody's nodding.
The other word for that is latkes.
Yes.
No, it's not latkes. No. Kleitskes, I found out, meant dumplings in Yiddish.
Potato dumplings.
So potato dumplings.
It's not latkes. Latkes I can make. And it was kataflana kleitskes. They would roll them into balls.
Right.
And boil them.
Sometimes a plums would be inside, or sometimes there would be a meat mixture inside. There would be
nothing. It was just plain potato. And after they were boiled, sometimes we'd eat them when they were hot. We would eat them in cold milk. I remember the potato balls in cold milk.
Yeah, they're very little, right?
Kopitki.
Yeah, the small ball. Yeah. About the size of a quarter.
It's like a gnocchi. Kopitki.
And what do you call it? When I was in Israel in 1969, a long time ago, my aunt, who also, she had been in the concentration camps in Poland, she knew what it was, and she made them for me. And she made them, though, with, like, she had boiled them and then sliced them and then fried them with fried onions.
Ah.
It was so good. But literally no one I ever talked to knows what they are, except I guess that maybe it was in the village. They came from a town called Makava in Lomża Gubernia. And I don't know much about Poland, but it was called, the state was Lomża. Lomża.
And do you make them yourself now?
I am going to try.
You should.
I looked up something called Katafana Kluski, I think I saw on the internet. Kluski. Uh-huh. Ever hear of that?
Kluski, yes. It's a noodle. Dough. It's a noodle. It's like an egg noodle.
Right.
It's a little wide and stuff like that. And
flour.
There is a variation of some poppy seeds, some milk mixture in making those.
I have all those recipes in here.
All right.
This was just also made from potato. Mm-hmm. That I found on the internet.
You should try
to. So I figured it sounded a lot like it. Yeah.
You should try to reproduce it according to your memory taste. I had to do that with a lot of recipes from my family. There were a lot of failures along the way, but I have a compost pile, so you know, I don't consider it waste. Really.
Yeah, they made such great food.
You'll
appreciate
the adventure.
Well, thank you for calling, Richie.
I know. And I'm sorry?
I said thank you for calling.
Oh, my pleasure. You take care. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. Polish and Lithuanian cuisine today on Food Friday Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Just a quick break right now. It's Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551. John Kowalski of the CIA, cookbook author Peter Zaransky, pierogi expert Greg Archer, and Barbara Chapaitis. They're here to give us a taste of what's in store for the festival. It's the Polish Festival. It's underway until Sunday through Sunday at 250 Old Maxwell Road in Latham, New York. What about dessert? You brought a bundt cake. It looks like it's chocolate with nuts on it.
You know what?
That's a vodka cake.
Vodka cake. It's got more nuts on it than.
Right. I think that's what Antoinette, I think, brought that.
Okay.
Who's, does a lot of the. She's sort of the goddess of the Polish festival. We could call her that, I think.
Absolutely, I think.
Antoinette, how do we say her last name? Zimbruskaya. And it's a chocolate and vodka cake. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can go wrong?
I can give you a list. 800-348-2551. And you've got some beer, speaking of things going wrong. let's see. Warka. What's that? Lazask. And Tatra. And
Żywiec.
How do you mix beer with Polish cuisine the way you mix sort of pear wine with food?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Polish beer, are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you mix. In fact, we should have a flight right now. What do you think?
Works for me.
It's calling to me, but I have to do the news after the show.
And I think we should pour some of the cherry brandy on the chocolate vodka cake.
Okay. All right. Yeah, absolutely. Triple win.
That's all made marinated.
Win, win, win.
With vodka and sitting there for about 3 weeks right now and should go age about 3 months to really get a nice balanced flavor in that.
800-348-2551. Margot in Castleton. Margot.
Hi there. This is just really a brief comment in response to Richie's comment before about the Polish Kloiczki's dish. My family, also Jewish, has a very long tradition dating back to when my mother and my aunts were alive of making Kloiczki's for our Passover Seder. Again, potato-based dumplings instead of the regular matzo balls, and it would go into a soup. And we were always joking about them because they were so heavy with the potato that they were like cannonballs. But we always enjoy them, and we pass the recipe on from year to year.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Margo. 800-348-2551. Is it heavy cooking? Is it heavy food?
It does not have to be.
Have to be.
Some of the country food is, you know, based on potato and kielbasa, but Polish cuisine, I would put it as sophisticated as some of the best French or Italian cuisines with their sauces. And, you know, it does not have to be heavy at all. Generally, from the villages, it's a little heavier. In the big cities, it's lighter and more sophisticated.
But it all depends what region you are in and everything else like that. A lot of it is based on very slow cooking, braising method, like rabbit braised with a little sour cream and some vegetables. Okay, so you put that in with a little broth on it, and it's covered in the oven simmering for a little while, so it becomes soft, nice and tender. Then you reduce the sauces down. So a lot of that, especially like the bigos, which is a national dish, or called hunter's stew, which they have some sauerkraut, made sauerkraut in there, and then he has bacon in there, and he has some pork in there. It's usually simmered, a broth made, and then what they do, they put some kielbasa, or when the early days, the hunters used to make that out in the field. They put a tripod up, they had the stew going, and whatever they shot, they put inside there, so it became like a game sort of a stew with just sauerkraut.
Yeah, bigos is often called the national comfort food of Poland.
Right.
When we serve it for our neighbors, we bring out the vodka and we teach them how to do vodka shots with bigos.
Absolutely. I found, too, that in the Lithuanian food that I export, there's a lot of fruit soups.
Cherry soup with sour cream
soup,
and everything
melons,
like that.
Just
blueberries
every kind
and stuff.
Of
yeah.
Fruit soup you could possibly imagine.
800-348-2551. Steve is in Newburgh. Steve.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am calling with regards to sort of charcuterie forced meat. I hope I can get an answer. I'm not by any means a skilled cook. My mother was a chef. I am a machinist. But I'm wondering, is there a way to make sausage or kielbasa without the use of sulfites or sulfates for the residential home cook?
Absolutely.
You bet.
I've authored the Art of Charcuterie first edition, and now the second edition came out on ebook and Vital Source. I work at the culinary, and you can definitely, fresh kielbasa does not have to have any nitrates or nitrites in it whatsoever. Seasoning, marjoram, salt, pepper, some garlic in there, and then you can poach that, grill it after, or if you make the ones that's hot smoke, you can do the same process without nitrate or nitrites whatsoever. Adjust the seasonings to whatever you like. Usually it's all pork. Sometimes you might be able to put a little beef in there, usually some fat, pork fat in there, seasonings. And if you're looking for ratios, if you do about 80% meat, 20% fat to it, that works out pretty well.
Yeah. My Lithuanian grandparents made their own sausage. Like, I don't know, every week they were up there grinding out meat for making sausage.
Yes.
And they couldn't even pronounce nitrates or nitrites. So, yeah.
But it's funny, we talk about nitrate, nitrites. We get, or we consume most of nitrate, nitrites through food. Beets, cabbage, celery.
Yeah.
Celery has the highest amount of nitrate, nitrites. So a lot of these companies now will say nitrate free, and you look under the ingredients, labeling law, it'll say celery salt powder. Absolutely. So there's a nitrates in there.
So we need to make a vegetable sausage.
Absolutely. Yes.
And it will be full of nitrates.
There you go. There you go.
So as far as the pork, if I get it from a local farmer and so forth, I mean, it would probably be one way or another inspected, I imagine, but I do have a local farmer that I bought a pig from last year.
Oh, nice.
Would that be fine for such a thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Reliable, very good. And you would like to use like the shoulder of it, which is good. It has a little bit more fat into lining in there. It's a little bit used, a little bit more. The leg is okay to use, but it's a little more leaner, so you would have to add more fat, other things to it.
Thank
now,
you for calling.
I seem to remember my grandparents who used to grind their own would do something like a ratio of 5-4-3 or something in that. You mentioned you have a charcuterie book.
Yes.
What did you say, Vital Source?
VitalSource.com. If you go on that, you can download the ebook.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Speaking of books, Laura and Peter Zaransky, Polish Classic Recipes, published by Pelican, and Polish Classic Desserts. Laura and Peter Zaransky, with photography by Bob Rock, also Pelican. That's your wife?
Yes, it is.
All right. You get most of the royalties, or do you split them 50-50?
No, she gets everything.
We're not going to go there. Yeah, she does.
I know this part of the world. Yeah. She gets everything, okay?
she's been cooking, you know, the Polish dishes for like 45 years. I'm the taster because I was born in Europe, and I remember how they, you know, taste. And and I'm the writer and the blogger and all that other stuff. We're a good team.
Who wants to tell me about polka music, which is going to be a big part of the festival, and it's a big part of the culture? Where did it come from?
Chicago.
Chicago? Okay. Pennsylvania, too? Yeah. Well, is it really Polish or is it Polish-American? No.
It's it was invented in the United States.
Really?
Yeah.
If you, 1, 2, 3. Just remember that.
Why do the men? Why do the women always dance with the women? There's never enough men to dance at polka festivals.
You do see that, right?
Yeah.
Because the men are all at the beer bar.
Okay.
I grew up going to polka hops at the local Polish sportsman's club, and that my father taught me how to polka. I'm very good at it. But then he would retire to the clam bar, actually, where I would hang out with a bunch of beer-soaked men and learn how to shuck clams. I'm 7 years old, right? My father's teaching me how to open a clam, how much horseradish to pour on it, and sucking it down. And all the guys are like, oh, wow, you have quite a daughter. She doesn't even flinch.
800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. To Saratoga Springs. Mike, go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Happy Friday.
Thank you.
I was traveling through, well, now it's called Czech Republic and also Poland back in the 90s. And I was on a train and I started talking to these two young guys. And anyway, it was about borscht. I grew up with my parents opening a cold jar of borscht. And that was the most disgusting thing I ever had in my life. In the port. But these guys said, no. And they took me to this Polish restaurant and the borscht was hot. It was like the best thing I ever had. I'm just wondering, what's the secret to making good hot borscht?
Wow. How many different kinds of borscht are there? As many kinds as there are. Yeah,
and you have two. You have the red and then you have the white.
You have the meat and then you have the vegetable one. Yeah.
Red is usually with beets. Sometimes they'll even ferment the beets a little bit by seasoning a little salt in that, shredding them, leaving them out a little bit. So you get this sort of a tart little juice that comes from it. Then a nice duck stock or broth usually in there with some vegetables simmered for a good amount of time. A lot of times you will see it clear, so it's strained and it just clear with a little sour cream, or you have uszki, which is a little pierogies that are made with stuff with mushrooms or that floated on top.
Yeah.
For Christmas, we always make the clear, I would call it borscht, you know, a little harder to pronounce, but it's a clear. It's based on a beef stock, and it's got the little uszka in it, and we serve it in teacups in our finest china as an appetizer, or you can make it with full of vegetables and a little sour cream.
Yeah, that's how
you
can
also make it cold.
Right. Yeah.
So the kinds you had that you liked, what were the qualities of it that you liked?
I just remember it was a clear, you know, beet red, and I think it was I think it had potatoes, but I don't know, is this so long ago now, but like 1996. But is there a restaurant here that would be a good one to go get some?
I'm not sure. I know in Catskills there's Annie's Kitchen or something like that. There's one that's a restaurant in there that's doing pretty good, and I've heard there was a new restaurant open up in Albany, but I'm not sure.
Antoinette is nodding. There's a new one opening up in Albany.
And if you can't find a restaurant and you come to the festival this weekend,
plenty of good food.
I'll sell you a cookbook that has all the recipes in it.
The different borscht.
Thank you for calling. 800-348-2551. You can tweet your questions and comments, WAMC Vox Pop. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But the phone number, 800-348-2551. And we have John calling from Kingston. John?
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I have a short story to share. So my mother was a child in pre-war Silesia, and her mother's mother was Polish, and her other three grandparents were Austrian. So to some extent, a typical mixture of peoples and cultures and ethnicities there. And she, when I was growing up, made a dish called plum dumplings or flammenknödel. And what you were talking about reminded me a lot of that. It's the knödel, right? It's just the German version. And it was a potato dough, and you had to rub it. You boil the potatoes, and you rub them on this grating board, and then you add in some flour, and I think, I don't remember, baking soda maybe, and you wrap them around fresh plums in the fall, and then you plop them in boiling water, and they come out, and you put melted butter and powdered sugar over them, and that was a piece of her childhood that she shared with me. I've made them. They came out adequately. An interesting little tidbit. So their family was reasonably well off as lawyers' family, although the practice was not very successful. But anyway, they had servants, and so the story she told was that this was yet another dish where the children, it was a delight for the children, and so they had some servants, and the servants were obligated to crank out plum dumplings by the dozen to feed the hungry children. And this was it's a little slice of life in that time and place. That this was how people from the middle class lived and entertained themselves.
Sure.
So I thought that might kind of fits into what you're describing.
Well, yes. Thank you. Thank you for calling, John. A great story. 800-348-2551.
We have a picture of the plum dumplings.
Yeah. Nice and brown.
And for the other caller that called in wondering, like, what restaurant, there's Musa Restaurant in Troy and Euro Deli in Latham. Mm. So check those out.
800-348-2551. Kurt in Castleton, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question about the cabbage used for goumki. My mom and grandma always used either Napa cabbage or just plain green cabbage, and you know they'd quickly parboil it and then peel off the back spines so it could be rolled up. The mixture of meat and rice and so forth could be rolled up. But I married a woman from Serbia, and they have a tradition of using they pickle whole heads of cabbage.
Wow.
And they instead substitute that. And it's really very good.
My aunt did that.
Am I betraying my Polish roots?
No, my aunt Janina did that. I remember that.
And how would they pickle the cabbage? Just vinegar and salt? Whole cabbage?
Yeah, they cut the core. Yeah. Cut the core out of the cabbage and put it into a salt brine for however long it takes.
Interesting.
To make sauerkraut, all you need is cabbage and salt.
Yeah.
And do they serve your goumki with a sauce? Tomato or mushroom or something different?
Well, my grandma and mom used to use a tomato-based sauce.
Mm.
Yeah.
But in the case of the recipe that I've really taken a liking to, it's more of a clear soup with a bit of onions and usually the three parts, onions, garlic, and perhaps some celery, and it has a lot of umami to it. It's very good.
A lot of nitrates.
Because a lot of times you see just some little bacon on the bottom of the tray, and then tomato base and stuff, and then the goumki's stuffed cabbage over the top and braised nicely, and you see them come out really great.
I'm getting hungry.
You know something I've done when I make goumki's? I'm sorry, I have to pronounce them that way. That's not how I was raised, but... I freeze the cabbage instead of boiling it, and it's very...
Absolutely.
It
works just as well.
Oh my God,
the same process.
So
it just
and it,
denatures
you don't
it nicely
your hands.
So you can just nice and easily wrap it and everything. Just take the core out.
Yep,
it works great.
It just peels right off.
Yep. You freeze the whole cabbage? Or
I freeze
the
whole
leaves?
Cabbage.
The whole cabbage.
Toss it in the freezer. Yeah.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Very good. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling, Kurt. 800-348-2551. Our next caller is in the Adirondacks. Don, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. My grandparents were born in the late 1800s in Galicia, which, of course, is the Ukraine at the time, but today would be Poland. And on holidays, they used to make a drink, a beverage called boilo. And they would buy inexpensive whiskey and boil it in a pot with herbs. Have you ever heard of it?
Whoa. What were those?
It was a killer.
Were those herbs they were using?
Yeah. Please share.
I'm from Virginia. They call that moonshine.
Yeah. Well, that my parents, after about 30 minutes to an hour in the holidays, were wasted.
Yeah.
It was such a strong. And I've never found anybody who ever heard of it, so I'm guessing maybe it was my grandfather's concoction.
Sounds pretty creative. Yeah.
Nobody can remember it after you. Right?
Yeah. And just as a side note, I think you talked about goumki's, of course. When we were raised, we called them halupki's.
Yes.
That's a Czech word. It's a Czech name.
Uh-huh.
Same to, okay.
There are as many names as there are recipes.
800-348-2551. The Polish Fest is underway. It goes tomorrow, also Sunday. They've got great weather coming up for it. It's an old 250 Old Maxwell Road in Latham. That's in the town of Colony in Albany County. Get your Google out. Old Maxwell Road, 250 Old Maxwell Road in Latham. We're taking calls today on Food Friday Vox Pop. It's all about Polish and Lithuanian food and cuisine, and we'll be back with more calls in a moment. It's Food Friday. It's Polish and Lithuanian cuisine. An email from Katie of Monterey, Massachusetts. I grew up with Lithuanian grandparents who ate some pretty intense things that I will not mention here. Okay. Despite this, my grandmother made plenty of great dishes, one of which was a mushroom soup for Christmas. She made it with mushrooms that she and my grandfather, both avid wild mushroomers, gathered during the year and dried. It was a beef-based broth, and we served it with a dollop of sour cream. This was always known in my family to be a Lithuanian tradition, but I have never been able to find a recipe for this. I have come up with a good one of my own, but have you ever heard of this before?
Oh, wow. Mushrooms are so important to Lithuanian cuisine. They considered mushrooms, there's actually a dissertation about this. It's called The Sacred Swarm, and it's about bees, trees, and mushrooms, which were three of the most sacred parts of Lithuanian culture. And mushrooms are considered one of the places where the afterworld and this world connect. They grow from the dead.
If you eat the wrong mushroom, you're
going to end up there. Yeah. And they're avid foragers of mushrooms, and they have all kinds of wild mushrooms that we don't have here. So probably all you can do is approximate close to, you know, what you had then. I make a lot of different mushroom soups myself. Some are cream-based, some are clear. Always use a beef broth at the bottom. But, oh, mushrooms. Even their cookies, they have a cookie that's shaped like a mushroom.
Paula writes, my grandmother made a dish called Siniki. Anybody recognize it? It's a dumpling made of farmer's cheese, egg, and flour. She can't find it anywhere, ever heard of it.
Yeah. It's actually a sweet. You make it for breakfast, and it's farmer's cheese right here, and flour, and some egg, and you, just like you would with a pancake in a pan, sprinkle it with confectioner's sugar and cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. And, go ahead. 800.
Good stuff.
800-348-2551 in Schenectady. It's Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi there. Yes. My maternal grandparents were from an area in Poland called Grodno Gubernia. I think that was the name of the shtetl or the city or the town or something like that. But my paternal grandparents were from Russia. I guess at that time it was called Russia. And the cuisine was different. Mm-hmm. I noticed that even when they each made latkes, potato latkes, which is, you know, traditional Jewish fare, they made it in a different way. They tasted different. They used different ingredients. Even though the base was potato, they were totally different. But my maternal grandparents, who were from Poland, they also used to have this, there was the red stuff, which was borscht, and then the green stuff, which was shav. I never knew what was in the shav, but I hated it. I tasted it, and I said, it's not for me. I didn't even like the borscht, although I liked the color. I was fascinated. I thought it was, oh wow, this is cool, but it was disgusting.
Shav is made with sorrel. It's a green called sorrel, and it has a lemony taste. It's very tart. Very
nice. We just made a pot a couple days ago. I
love it.
I found the sorrel at the farmer's market.
I grow it.
It's amazing.
I couldn't tolerate it. I tried it even as an adult. I was at some event, and I said, oh, I'll try it again. I know I hated it as a child, and I couldn't deal with it. It just did not attract my palate. And it was very interesting. There was also a mead wine.
Yes.
That was very, very much part of the kitchen. And also, my maternal grandmother would make something called a guggle muggle. Every time I was sick with some kind of respiratory thing or bronchitis or a cold, she made me this guggle muggle, and it put me out. I'm sure that there was some kind of alcohol.
You probably had that whiskey with herbs in it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I don't know what a guggle muggle was. I know it had honey, and it had a bunch of other things, but it would just put me asleep, and I'm certain that it had to have some kind of alcohol. But I never know. I never.
Maybe
found
some
out.
Of those mushrooms.
So I want to thank you. Thank you for these memories. Trip. You know, ironically, I can't eat any of the foods now. Well, I became vegan, but I'm not going to have anything that has any dairy or butter. And
you can still eat shav.
No, I'm also gluten-free and low FODMAP, so I can't eat much of anything. It's really sad. And the saddest thing is that my children will never understand that culture because they have no connection to it. They're so suburbanized.
Well, send them to the Polish Fest.
Yeah,
send them
our way.
To the Polish Fest if they're not vegan. Or gluten-free, they can certainly enjoy everything, right?
Maybe she can still drink the goggle moggle, whatever it was.
they could take the cabbage off the cabbage rolls.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because I'm here, I'm the Lithuanian, and honey was an incredibly important part of Lithuanian culture.
Krupnik.
Is it?
Krupnik,
is it as important in Polish culture?
Bee,
Yeah, I mean, the owning bees.
Absolutely.
The introduction,
owning bees,
when you say hello in Lithuanian, it's labis bisulis, which means we share a hive. Huh.
Yeah. I love that.
Let's, I know, isn't it cool?
I'll say, can I give you a vodka?
Let's talk to Barbara in Athens. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi. What a very fun and informative show.
Thank you.
Okay, so when I was a little girl, I would visit my grandmother in Dixon City, Pennsylvania. Mm. And she didn't speak English, so I never really, really related to her well. But anyway, she made this chicken soup, and I have been trying to replicate it. And I know there has to be one ingredient I just can't seem to isolate or find to put in. And I love Barbara's comment about just trying to, experiment and try to revive, you said?
Yes.
Whatever the word is, your taste memory. I love that. And
yes.
That's kind of like what I've been trying to do. But so I know it's not dill. So I didn't know, is there maybe some little ingredient that is in a traditional old world grandmother's chicken soup, maybe?
Right. You get the natural parsley and all that. But I have a story about this because my sons, I used to take them to grandma. Okay, she used to do the cooking and all that. And we get home, and so today I would ask, well, Dad, can you make this for us? And, I'd go and slave and make it and really good. I thought it was pretty good. And they said, Dad, it's not like grandma's. So I got really kind of upset one time. I said, oh, this is it. I actually stood there as she took a little cup of this, a glass of this, weighed it out. After she measured it, she was going to put it in. It did everything exactly as she did. It was like, Dad, it's still not Babchi's cooking. So some of it has the heart to do with that, okay? Yeah. The soul, what's in there, and the little extra things that just goes in that makes it taste and say hello.
But if you have a sense of a missing ingredient, I would do like a broad search of different kinds of chicken soups out of the regions, because I'm sure every region had a slightly different ingredient that they threw in. And I would just, do a series of trying them all one by one. And think about, you started with dill. That was going to be my first guess because it's such a ubiquitous kind of herb from the region. But I would just continue that journey.
Dill, and carrot, salt.
Yeah. You got to do that. And at the least, you're going to enjoy the chicken soup in the meantime. It's good for you.
Yeah. And you'll be healthy.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And
You're welcome.
I'm afraid it's like one of those things. What is it like in the bakers, or it was like the yeast was just in the air.
Certain bacteria, certain yeasts.
So I'm just thinking, you just had the chemistry in her kitchen.
Could be
what
the chickens were fed.
Well, right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. It could have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara. 800-348-2551. Greg, you've written a book called Grace Revealed. It's a memoir. We're going to tell us it's a dark memoir, I guess.
Well, it's a little neurotic in the beginning and the end, and then it's Sophie's choice in the middle. So it's sort of it's the best way I can describe it. It's my journey uncovering my Polish family's journey surviving World War II, particularly Stalin, and about a million Poles and others who were deported from Eastern Poland to Siberia and eventually became refugees. And my family ended up in Africa and lived there in Africa for about 8 years in Tanzania. And that's actually where my mother learned how to make pierogi. My grandmother taught my mother how to make pierogi in Africa, of all places. I'll be doing a talk on that this week on Saturday and Sunday. So come on by for that.
But, Grace revealed by Greg Archer. That part of the world, unfortunately, has a history of invasion and occupation. Did that unwanted presence change Polish and Lithuanian cuisine? Did it take in those influences, whether they were wanted or not?
But that goes back over many centuries. I mean, going back to the 4th or 5th century when the Italians brought salads to Poland, you know, and
Queen Bona, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so Polish cuisine, in a lot of ways, is an amalgamation of the cultures, you know, that resulted from takeovers and wars and battles. And Polish were lovers. They weren't great fighters.
You got all the desserts from Austria and stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Let's talk to Greg in East Meredith. Greg.
Good name.
Greg?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hello. Over the years, I've noticed a lot of similarities between Polish and German food. I'm of Polish descent. But one thing my grandmother used to make all the time was sauerkraut. And I never really liked the Polish-style sauerkraut as much as the German-style, I'm afraid. And I'm just curious, are there some basic differences between the two types of sauerkraut and the way they're made?
Jeez. I think just maybe the seasonings that you add in it. Most of the Polish one, you'll see some caraway in there, sauerkraut, just basic cabbage that's fermented. But after that, you can cook it with some onions or a little bacon in there. You can also put some kielbasa in there to give it the flavor. So everyone can introduce something a little different, some mushrooms even, or dried mushrooms. But that's pretty much it, I think.
Dried mushrooms are such a huge part of Polish cuisine. And the mushrooms that you get here are not like the mushrooms that you get in Poland. Yep. So I've been getting my mushrooms from Bulgaria online for a long time, but then they discovered capitalism. So now I get them on Amazon. But they're pretty close. They come from different parts of the world, but we use dried mushrooms a lot.
Yes, yes.
All right, Greg.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. And let's check in with Diana in Kerhonkson. Diana.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Hi. Hi. My mother and my aunt came from Zakopane, and our whole family from them, every Easter, we would make Biały Borscht and... I just wondered, have you had it? And it's a tradition in our family now, and I've taught my children, so it's going to go on. I hope my grandchildren will someday do it.
Oh, good for you. That's a great dish.
And another thing, as a kid, I had, which I don't care to have again, but I had such a thing as czarnina, and I wondered, have you ever had that?
Duck blood soup is very, very good.
Duck blood soup?
Yeah,
the blood soup
from
duck. I didn't like that.
Absolutely. It's really nice. And the blood is the thickener of the whole soup and everything.
It's really hard to get fresh duck blood now because of the food regulations.
Yeah. But the white borscht is very popular, too, especially for New Year's and that, as good luck and everything. It's sort of a pork base, and it's a little sour. Mm. So you do, and you usually pour it over mashed potatoes, dry, not a lot of butter and stuff, but kind of dried mashed potatoes, some eggs that are boiled and sliced over the top, bacon sautéed with some onions over the top of that, and it's a nice way to for a soup or a filler for a lunch, light lunch.
Yeah, that was very much my Easter experience, too. We always had that every year.
Yeah, well, what I found is to make the soup, I remember my mother and aunt always using fresh kielbasa. And I've tried it with the store-bought, you know, like the package deals that they have. And
not
it doesn't
good.
Come out like that at all. The fresh kielbasa is white. And then you use that as a stock. And I always found it was very good. I also have to say you had me laughing because about the gołąbki. We always made it with, you know, rolled stuffed the cabbage. But at one time, I had to make a fast potluck, and what I did was I just put it in layers, and I got some somebody came to me after having it, and they said, oh, my God, that was so good. How did you make that? Give me your recipe. And I started to laugh, and I said, all you do is eliminate rolling the cabbage and just putting in layers. So it was, you know, we made me laugh when you called it Americanized. And what else? There was so many things. Oh, my other favorite thing in the summer would be my mother would make blueberry pierogi.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And,
oh, my
yes.
God. Wow. I always look forward to that. Of yes. course, it was just, you know, the blueberry pierogi and then the sour cream on top. And it was
strawberries,
like,
very good,
you know,
too.
I was in heaven when I had that. Right.
Well, thank you for calling, Diane.
My aunt made it with apricots also. But if you never tried it with blueberries, I think you'd like it.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. Let's talk now to Paula. Paula in Lanesboro. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
My ancestry was Irish and German. My husband, though, is Polish. His mother came from Poland with her family at the age of 6, and that was in 1911. Mm. She used to make the babka for us for holidays, and I have a Polish cookbook because at holidays, several times, I would make some form of Polish food, but I never was able to get to have it as good as what my mother-in-law made. At least that's what my husband always says. And I've looked around locally, Adams, North Adams, around Hartford and all, but I've never found a babka as good as what she made.
Come to the festival, I'll hook you up.
There you go. Come to the festival. Absolutely.
I will.
There's a great dessert tent at the festival with a lot of really yummy Polish desserts, and I've got 5 babka recipes in my book.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I want to tell you something else as well.
What's that?
My husband's father came over from Poland, apparently, in about 1916, and he had a sister in New Jersey, and for whatever reason, he went to Chicago, but then was going to took the train back from Chicago to stay with his sister. He got on the train, went through Canada. Now, he had an immigration card and so forth to the United States, but in Canada, since Poland was part of the Austrian Empire, the Canadians were picking up all those who were assumed to be in the Austrian Empire. So he spent 3 years in a prison camp.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
The first was right across the border from the United States. It's on a lake, and I'm sorry I can't recall the name of the fort.
Well,
it's an ancient fort.
Well, thank you for calling, Paula. We're just about out of time, but, that's quite a story.
Okay. He finally got back, but
I'm glad.
I thought that was really unique that Canadians were holding people. Okay, thanks very much. It's a good program you have, and I will go to the Latham Festival.
Great.
Thank you very much for calling. And we are out of time. My apologies to those people left on the line. Thanks to John Kowalski, Peter Zaransky, Greg Archer, and Barbara Chapitis. It's the Polis Festival. It's going right now through Sunday, 250 Old Maxwell Road in Latham, New York. Support for WAMC comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department, made-to-order sandwiches, a soup, and a salad bar, rivervalley.coop. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers and blends, specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com for the upcoming events. HGS Home Chef, Historic Hillsdale. Cooking classes and 2 designer kitchens taught by national and local specialists. HillsdaleGeneralStore.com for what's cooking. And the Pioneer Valley Food Tours, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering walking tours, visiting local food producers, tasting a selection of seasonal specialties. PioneerValleyFoodTours.com. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Barb King took our calls. Producer, Jim Lavoulis. Thanks again for joining us on this Food Friday. I'm Brian Shields. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge.